We'll be getting started here in just a few moments. Karen will be joining us.
Hey, Melinda, I'm here.
Hey, Karen, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you doing?
Well, it's 90 degrees in Indiana today. What do you think? Loving it.
Well, you know what? That might be a first. I think your temperature is above ours.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, we had a cold front come through, and actually, I was out last night and kind of put on a little sweater. That might be the last time for a while, but
I think it
did a thunder here this weekend, so I thought of you.
Yeah, loving it today, so hopefully
good
it will stay
for
around.
You.
Well, if you're ready to get started, Karen, we'll go ahead and have Mark mute everyone, and then we'll star 6 back in.
Okay.
Okay, we'd like to thank everybody for joining us tonight and getting all their questions submitted in. And we have many to go through, and just be patient. We'll get to yours as soon as we can. Karen, are you back with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. So this evening, Karen, we're going to be talking about your television show, A Young and Unbalanced Horse, Riding in the Clinic, Becoming a Confident Leader, and Rope Hackamore versus the Snaffle Bit. So we'll go ahead and start with the first one. It's from Joy, and it says, Dish has dropped the channel that carries or carried your show. Will the show be moving to another channel? How am I going to keep up? Help. Thanks, Joy.
Yeah. I have some bad news on that side. That particular channel was run through the communications department at a university, and we were notified that they were changing the format. And the show is actually not on another channel right now. There are a couple of different possibilities, you know, for other television shows, but probably the best bet right now is to go ahead and order the television shows online. They're very inexpensive. They're grouped in 3 episodes per DVD, and they're special pricing if you get, the entire set of 12 episodes. And we're going to be shooting more episodes this coming fall for more television shows with more topics and more subjects, and probably be taking some of the teleseminar subjects and expanding on them and talking about them. Obviously on video, it's easier for me to show you what I'm trying to describe, on audio only. So it's a wonderful format for short, you know, subjects like that. But that's probably the best recommendation I can make right now, because I really don't know where the television show is going to go from here. One of the things I want to mention, I talk about different subjects in different episodes, and there's one particular set. There are 3 episodes, and it's an introduction to ranch roping. And some people are familiar with ranch roping and others are not. And a lot of times when people hear roping, especially women, we just tune it out. We say, if that's not for me. The thing I like about ranch roping is it's not a speed event. It's very, it replicates what somebody would do, wanting their cattle and animals and horses handled very well and quietly and slow. So to me, it's a wonderful thing that you can do with your horse as you become more accomplished and have the foundation. Then it's important to take your horse from that principle of the communication and then apply it to a purpose. It gives a horse and a person a job, and I've seen, a lot of people and a lot of horses really make some very big improvements just because they have a reason to go sideways, or they have a reason to go forwards, or they have a reason to go backwards. Without that, what we tend to do is drill and drill and drill the horse, and the horse and the people, get to a point and go, why am I doing this? And so I find things like ranch roping, pull across, anything that you can do that takes an activity and uses the things that you and your horse are familiar with, It makes everybody feel good. You know, even if you're not fantastic at it, you know, that's the other thing is, you know, with ranch roping, I kind of compare it a lot to golf because you're playing your own game. And everybody messes up. I've seen people, you know, very, very skilled people just can't, you know, throw a loop one day for some reason. And nobody cares. You know, you just kind of laugh it off. So it doesn't have that competitive edge like other activities sometimes do with horses that makes it, you know, a bit imposing and you get self-conscious about it. The person that's on those DVDs is named Dan Moyer, and he is he is one of the most skilled teachers. There's a lot of wonderful teachers out there, but what I do when I come across somebody that's very skilled and very effective in explaining things in such a way, and that was something that intrigued me when I first met Dan Moyer, is I, you know, observed not only his skill with his horses and his cattle and his roping and rawhide braiding and, you know, lot packing. He's very skilled in a lot of different practical applications, but his ability to explain it was just outstanding, and it really struck me that he was such a good teacher that was somebody that I selected to include in the television show. So sometimes people go, well, why do you have, you know, ranch roping as one of the television shows, and that's not really for me. You know, get that DVD, and the way he explains it, it's very foundation, and it can be a lot of fun with the right instruction, the right introduction. It can really expand what you do with your horse. So take a look at those television shows as well.
Okay. I know Elisa likes that one really well. She goes back to the ranch ranch roping. Thank goodness. I have not broke the news to her that your show's not on because we've got enough taped that we can just keep repeating them, and maybe she won't notice.
Yeah. Well, it's something, you know, like Melinda, for where your skill level is at, it would take, you know, you and your horse, it gives you something to do. Rope handling skills are something you're already developing. It's not that big of a jump. A lot of people think, oh, that's, you know, they're used to seeing team roping or something like that. And you know, that is something that can go really fast and furious. And sometimes people who are highly skilled at an activity have a difficult time, especially if they've grown up with it, kind of, you know, making those adaptations to somebody who's a very beginner. Sometimes, I mean, it starts with how do you coil the rope? You know, how do you handle the rope? How do you develop those, you know, muscle memories for something new and different? And that's another thing I want to emphasize is it's important to keep expanding into different areas, to keep your mind fresh, to keep learning different things, especially things not only mentally but that require new muscle memory. To me, it's very important to keep that communication to our muscle fibers alert and awake for new information so that we can keep fresh, a fresh awareness of what's going on. So rather than getting into routine and drilling and things like that, you know, it's something new and different and really a lot of fun. I just can't even describe how fun it is. Such a nice atmosphere and wonderful people, so... Next time I see you, Melinda, we'll be roping. You don't know that.
That's right. We'll be ready for something. So, and that's something that I do appreciate with you, Karen, is always that willingness to go try something new. I know when we were out in Missouri and we did the polo cross, and I'm like, oh, please. But I had a lot of fun with that. And it really was. And you do use the difference. The skill levels, and I know even when we talked about on the trails and stuff, given Latigo that job of tracking cattle, it's that putting your mindset out there to have a job, and that advice does help. It does work.
Yeah. I'll give you an example. It's so important that my friend Dan Moyer, you know, he's cowboyed his whole life, and, you know, we talk about, you know, colt starting and different things, and he said to me one day, let me just digress a little bit. You know, I study not only how people handle animals, communicate with animals, but how they communicate with people. And like I said, Dan really intrigued me. When I met his grown daughters, I understood, you know, where he developed that skill. One of his daughters rode with him since she was 7 years old, and he wasn't saying it braggart or anything. He's a very humble man, but he said, you know, Karen, he said, my little girl rode with me her whole life from the time she was 7 years old on working cattle ranches. And he said, she never got hurt. He always had an eye on her. He always watched what was setting up. He always knew what to say, and not only what to say, but how to say it so that she wouldn't, you know, a little girl wouldn't just cry and get mad and go in the house, you know. He really wanted her with him, and she is handy. Any of those ranches in Southern Colorado would love to have her working out there on the ranches, and that says a lot for a woman on a true working cattle ranch. But she grew up with it with the right, you know, kind of instruction. But, you know, Dan asked me one day, he said, you know, Karen, I know that people start cold without cattle, but he said, I don't know how you would do that. He said, I just don't know how you would do that. As soon as, you know, that colt has its first rides and, you know, get them started and get a little bit of a handle, a little bit of direction, right away, and a lot of people start colts this way, they'll put those colts right behind the cattle and give them a little job to do. And the herd dynamic helps that colt, you know, build their confidence, build their experience, you know, and the person that's riding the colt, you know, say, for example, Dan, he knows what, you know, he can get and have an idea what kind of a day he's going to have, what kind of country he's going to have to ride in, what he's going to have to do. He doesn't take the colt on a day that has a high demand. He's going to take it on a light gather or something like that, doesn't challenge it too much. But it gives him and that colt a purpose and a job. And, you know, for him to say, I know you can start colts without cattle, but he said, in his mind, without the job of cattle, he said, how would you do that? How would you teach a colt to go and to pick up and slow down and turn and all that stuff? You know, it's that imperative and that entrenched in his world. So I find that really interesting. If you don't understand really the how important having a purpose is, that's a really good example of how important it is, you know, especially in the mind of somebody like Dan Moyer. So I love to draw from those kinds of real life situations and those wonderful examples.
Okay. All right. Well, you want to go ahead and move on, Karen, to the next question then?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That will be young and unbalanced. And this is from Judy. It says, my 4-year-old looks good tearing around the field, but I don't get the feeling that I would expect when I ride him. Is that because he is still young and still unbalanced?
Sorry, say that again, Melinda.
Okay. She said he looks good tearing around the field.
Looks
but when
good,
he
like
rides
athletic
him,
or balanced or?
I don't know. She's just saying he looks good tearing around the field, but I don't get the feeling that I would expect when I ride him. Is that because he's still young and still unbalanced? So I guess she's thinking that, he's out free. He looks like he's moving well, but when she's riding him, I guess she's not feeling that balance.
Okay. Well, I'll kind of explore it, you know, kind of not having an exact picture of it, you know, kind of making an assumption there. You know, when you watch a horse at liberty, you know, there's kind of three different stages that horses develop. The first is self-carriage. And so what you're describing there, Judy, is that his self-carriage looks very balanced and very athletic. And, you know, horses are like people. Some horses are more, you know, athletic than others. They have, you know, different physiologies, just like people are, what we're born with. But it's also, you know, what we develop. And I'm going to talk just very briefly about developing self-carriage. You know, horses that are born in the wild go through all kinds of terrain. You know, nobody says, oh, well, the little ones were born, and so, you know, for the first 6 months, we can only do this. Horses are designed in the natural environment to move as fast as and over the same terrain as the herd. Now, herds usually are not being pressured. So, you know, they're not, you know, usually at a run unless there is something chasing them or something like that. But the type of terrain, you know, especially up and down, really helps the horse develop self-carriage. And what we tend to do is we take all of that away. We tend to, you know, make everything level and smooth and even and with a cushion of, you know, dirt to minimize the impact and shock chambers, you know, and all kinds of things. you know, a horse's body, you know, if it's allowed to develop, you know, horses can, we're actually, in my opinion, we're weakening a lot of our breeds because we're taking away a lot of the stimulus. You know, it's a, you know, common tale, you know, commonly known in the Portage horse industry that, you know, what was appealing were these tiny little dainty feet and these great big massive muscle bodies. And, you know, that's turned around a lot. But you can see where the human, you know, for somebody to get a ribbon and to have a viable business in the industry, you know, a lot of people felt pressure that they had to conform to those things, you know, to where it actually starts, you know, being a detriment to that particular, you know, breed of horse. So what we look at in the wild and what we're looking at with horses is, to me, it's important to have young horses on uneven terrain, you know, to simulate the wild environment as much as possible, put obstacles out there that they have to go over all the time. They have to pick up their feet. You know, they're even like to come in the gate or go out the gate, you know, put a couple of cavalettis that, you know, they need to step over or jump over or maneuver over, you know, put over toys, put all kinds of obstacles out there. You know, it's really amazing how athletic the horse is, and yet what we do is strip everything and level everything and take everything away to where, you know, they don't even have, you know, a post to rub on. You know, so think about those things sometimes. So that's self-carriage. That's number one. You know, ideally, you'd feed in one part of the pasture and put your water up on top of the hill of the other part of the pasture, you know, and have those horses going up and down. We had property up in Colorado, and there was a lane where the horses would go down kind of a lane out to pasture, and I put logs across there. So they were always going up and down and over so that when we were out, you know, in unexpected terrain, those horses, you know, they were so sure-footed, they'd stand on the log. You know, it was a part of their life. So I want to emphasize that. So when a horse develops self-carriage, then the next stage is that they're going to develop the ability to carry dead weight. And that's where saddle adds weight to the horse, and also the person, you know, the saddle is the dead weight. And so when you have a horse carrying dead weight, that's another thing that, you know, my friend Dan Moyer does, you know, and a lot of people that start colts out on ranches, they'll have those colts pack salt. They have to take salt out to the pastures, you know, for the animals. And the first job those horses have is feeling dead weight. And then they have to negotiate, you know, their body with not only their live weight, you know, their self-carriage, but also with weight added to it. So that's another calibration that a horse develops. Then lastly, there's live weight, and that's a human being up on their back. And the reason there's a difference between live weight and dead weight. Like if you've ever picked up a little kid, it's a lot easier to pick up a little kid when they want to be picked up versus when they don't want to be picked up. If that gives you a simplistic example of live weight versus dead weight. I've seen little kids that weigh, you know, 10 pounds and they feel like, you know, 60 pounds because they get rigid and they just lay down, and that they kind of make themselves into dead weight to make it difficult. So live weight is the horse having to develop the ability to rebalance and recalibrate their balance depending on what we do. And, you know, that's simply the rider. Then the very last stage is when we become a guider. That's when we start using our communication to redirect the horse. And that's why one of the things in starting colts in young horses, the less experienced the horse, the more experienced the person should be. And so many times, you know, at clinics, even with really experienced horses, a lot of what I do in the beginning riding stages is get people to turn loose of the reins. You know, we get so consumed in guiding the horse. You know, we micromanage these horses. And I'll have people just turn loose of the reins and feel your balance point. Feel, you know, the motion of the horse. Allow that horse to move freely. And a lot of times when horses are imbalanced in someone's home, and certainly there are physical reasons for that, I've seen that, but very few examples than you would think. Most of the time, it's because the person isn't in sync, hasn't developed that ability to feel that horse, to be able to have that seat. When the horse zigs, you zig, and when they zag, they zag. Because when you don't develop that, we tend to ride more rigid, and we want that horse to only have certain motion. And when that horse goes out of that motion for some reason, we haven't developed the ability to instantly rebalance ourselves or stay in sync with the horse. It's kind of hard to describe, you know, without showing it, but I hope you can envision that. So the horse's ability to be athletic is in direct relation to our ability to go with the flow, if that makes sense, kind of knowing all those different stages. And also having that horse has gone through the stage of carrying dead weight before carrying live weight, and then live weight into the guiding person. If you think about it in those different stages, a lot of times when people ride a colt that haven't kind of gone about this process, you know, they get on a colt, they collect them, they put pressure, and they want that horse to be in frame, you know, on the first ride. And that doesn't give that horse that opportunity to find their athleticism and feel their own athleticism before you start kind of guiding and directing and picking up and holding and releasing and, you know, the variety of things that a horse needs to do to develop its full potential, I guess. You know, I'm talking in an ideal world, how would I develop a horse to, you know, in my idea of what their full potential would be, those are the stages that I would learn, you know, that I would want to take that horse through to help that horse be the best that it can be. So sometimes when we have that feeling that when I ride, that horse is not going to be as balanced and athletic, what that is it's, and I'll tell you what, horse people, you don't have to be in it very long to start really respecting that gut feeling. What that's telling you is that you have an opportunity to develop your ability to turn loose to the horse. That may be the tendency. And sometimes I've seen people, because of their nervousness, they get on a young horse, and because they're scared, they, in their physiology, what they do with their seat and their legs and their hands and their rigidity, they actually make the horse imbalanced. You know, and it's an amazing thing, you know, if, you know, you were in an enclosed area and you turned loose and, you know, believe me, I've had these experiences where I came up, I was moving some horses with one of my very solid horses and, you know, had a lot of trust in him, a lot of everything, you know, I'd ridden him, you know, for years, and we came up over a hill and he got caught up with the herd. The herd kind of tipped up over the hill across a great big you know, open field, and they all took off at a dead run, and he got caught up in that. Well, I'm sitting there thinking, oh, I'm going to whoa him, and I'm going to slow him, and boy, my survival instinct kicked in and said, you know what, I'm going to get myself in trouble. I'm going to imbalance him if I try to do anything other than just turn loose, go with it. Horses usually don't go very far, and I turned loose of him and allowed him to find his balance. And I'll tell you, we were going, you know, straight down a hill, you know, flat chat with a herd of horses. And, you know, if I'd had a little more experience today, I would have felt exhilarated. At the time, it was a fine line between terror and exhilaration. You know, that's, people describe roller coasters as a fine line between terror and exhilaration. You know, but it was a very freeing effect, and I could feel him in his balance. And I looked over at the other horses running next to me, and I remember thinking in my mind, well, they're not falling down. They're not falling down. Why would he fall down? You know, except for the fact that I would get in the way and do something to imbalance him. You see, so you know, probably an answer. You know, that's a long answer to that observation. The short answer would be to get on your more experienced horse and start doing some of the exercises that I show in the Riding from the Above DVD, where you're turning loose of the reins and allowing that horse to move freely underneath you. You know, you don't have to go out in a, you know, 200-acre pasture. You know, start in a round pen, start in a small area, and just take a passenger lesson. Just see what that feels like. And it's really amazing because we're so conditioned to put pressure on those reins. You know, every moment we're in the saddle, there's pressure on these reins. And I remember, you know, the first time you let go, and I watch people in my clinics, the first time, you know, I say, now just turn loose of the reins, and you can see the look on their face like, well, the horse, he's going to run, you know, and I go, well, where is he really going to go? And you can slow him, you know, and then turn loose again. And it's really an amazing experience. Once you turn loose of those reins, I'm not saying, you know, throw them away or don't use them if you need them and things like that, but every chance you get, release that pressure to that horse, and you'll really be amazed. There's a mounted police unit that I did a clinic with. And when I told them to turn loose of those reins, I'll tell you what, they all looked at me and said, "You're kidding." And I said, "No." And they said, "Don't you see how, you know," and the horses were tight, they were kind of bunched up a little bit. And when they turned loose of those reins, every single one of those horses dropped their heads and started looking like the old cow pony. Every single one of those horses, they were going around the arena, you know, to walk, trot, and a canter on a loose rein. When we got done with these exercises over a couple of days, the riders and the horses were so much more relaxed. They were so much more balanced. The horses were confident. You can always pick up and use a rein. But really try to kind of think of not overusing those reins. We oversteer our horses all the time. Just turn loose sometimes and develop your seat and, you know, the balance in your seat. Isolate that. As long as you're using your reins, you're tipping your balance a little bit off center. So, you know, it's a really important exercise, and I really enjoy doing that for people in clinics. A lot of people say, well, my horse can't do that. And I go, well, I'll bet you a cookie, you know, it can. It's going around without you in the pasture right now. It's doing just fine without you. Now let's add you to that mix in the stages that I described, but do it in such a way that it doesn't interfere or imbalance the horse. That's what this, you know, Judy, your message is kind of describing to me, that at an instinctive level, you're going, how I ride is not going to allow that horse to be as free moving and athletic as it is, you know, running around the field without me. You know, that's the ideal, is to be able to develop that ability to do so. So get to your horse that is more reliable, doesn't want to go anywhere, the one that you feel ultimately confident in, and just start these exercises so you can get comfortable and familiar with the passenger lesson, you know, and, you know, pick it up into a trot. You don't have to go, you know, trotting for 30 minutes, just trot for, you know, a few fence posts, and then tip it down to a walk with as little pressure as you can, and then tip it up again and bring it back down, tip it up, tip it down. One of the things we don't do enough of is transitions with horses. And when you feel confident with that, tip it up into a canter, you know, and see if you can give your horse a truly loose rein, go at a canter. If they're going too fast, use your rein, you know, slow it down, do lots of trot to canter transitions. And you start developing your seat and your ability to turn loose and feel the balance of the horse. And that's what I'd recommend. It's kind of a big explanation for, you know, what is a seemingly a short subject, but there's a process. I want you to think of, it's not just one exercise or two exercises over, you know, a day or two or a week or 30 days. It's a process over, you know, every time you ride. Just feel what that horse needs from you, and go outside of maybe what your regular routine is right now to develop that ability to help that horse have the same kind of balance and athleticism that you see in the pasture when they're underneath you.
Okay. Well, Judy, we thank you for submitting that question, and Karen, thank you for answering it, and that was really interesting. There's a question number 5 that kind of goes into that a little bit, and we're going to carry that a little bit further. So, but we'll move on to question 3 first, and this one's from Pat, and it says, I know that you say that all levels can participate in your clinics and get something from them, and I realize that I have much to still learn. I have worked with various natural methods, and I do have your DVD set and find it wonderful. I feel quite confident on the ground, and although my skills definitely can improve, my horses and I can do the same exercises well and having fun doing it while doing it. My problem is riding. The minute I get ready to put my foot in the stirrup, fear sets in and I am terrified. not because I've ever been hurt, but because I know that my balance is not what it used to be and that I'm likely to be hurt if I fall. My horse is not the problem. They both are wonderful, well-trained, natural horses. I have talked with you about this, and you suggested some ground exercises that would be helpful. But unfortunately, I can do those on the ground but still fear riding. Now back to the clinic. I know that if some or even one of the participants is a beginner to the method, we could easily spend 3 days without riding. I am afraid that I could spend 3 days improving my ground skills and still not do anything about fear of riding. I only have a certain amount of money to spend on clinics or lessons this year and want to be sure it helps me. Your thoughts on whether or not the clinic would benefit me further than my ground skills. Thanks so much, Pat.
Okay. I'm going to answer this kind of in two parts. The first thing is, you know, what to do, you know, when you get done with the clinic. You know, and that is a dynamic. You know, when you get into clinics, you know, I have to look for what is the most, you know, I have an idea of how far I want people to take. Last year, I think there were three clinics that got to that didn't go into much riding, little if any, because the you know ground skills were you know things that were just so new and so different. There were some horses that were extremely challenging and needed more time. And you know this is a thing. You know, one of my teachers who's passed away now, Ray Hunt. You know, he would start his clinics by saying, you know, let me make something really clear. He said, number one, I am here for these horses. Number two, I'm here for me. And whatever's left over, you can have. So, you know, he kind of started the clinic saying, you know, these horses are going to tell us, you know, what we need to do and what we need to work on. And that's something that, you know, I don't put it out there quite like that. But, you know, to me, the horses are the most important thing. And I appreciate your perspective, Kat, that, you know, you can always learn something. But what I would suggest you to do, and usually when, you know, we get to a point in the clinic where, we 3 days is not that much time. A lot of people think, oh, you've got 3 days, you can, you know, do everything. But I've seen plenty of clinics where, you know, there were quite a few people that shouldn't be horseback. And so the safety of people is number one for me. Now, I do make adjustments, too. If the majority of people, you know, do feel confident and are prepared and that kind of thing, I have people communicate from up on the horse's back. And then people who I don't recommend riding, they will continue on the ground. And that's why I call one of my DVDs Riding from the Ground, because whether you're on the horse's back or you're on the ground, you know, you are in communication with that horse through your feel. So, you know, it may look like a lead line when you're on the ground, but to me, that's your brain. And you're developing your ability of your feel with your hands to communicate, to transmit your idea, you know, to the horse and to teach that horse to release. So, you know, that is, you know, important to me to take a clinic and orchestrate the whole thing. So, you know, that is a factor there. What I would recommend you do, because you're describing something that, you know, isn't, in my opinion, isn't oftentimes resolved in a clinic, and that's riding. If we had 3 weeks, you know, that would give you more time, you know, to do that. But what I would recommend to anyone who has this sensation when you put your foot in the stirrup that all of a sudden another you know, wave of fear comes across is, you know, it's not the horse. What your body needs to do is to develop the comfort level with the sensation of sitting in the saddle. And what I would recommend doing, and I've had people do this at clinics who are absolutely, I mean, terrified, crying, shrieking out, and I tell them at the beginning of the clinic, you do not have to ride your horse. And they look at me and they go, well, aren't you going to make me? I go, absolutely not. And don't let anybody, you know, make you do something that you feel uncomfortable with. But I tell them, but you may want to ride, because when you develop these abilities of communication on the ground, your body instinctively knows that you will carry, you'll take that skill of communication up onto the horse's back. Now, what's missing is your seated balance. And what I recommend to people, and I'll have people at clinics where I'll say, I'll hold the horse. I'll be teaching on a microphone. I'll be talking to the group. And I'll say, you know what, why don't you just sit there? Just step up, you know, into saddle. And we check the saddle. I show people how to check saddles, how to set yourself up for, you know, to make sure the saddle's safe, it's not going to slip, you know, these kind of things. Also, another thing that can help people develop a feeling of security in the saddle faster is to ride with leathers on, whether that's, you know, jodhpurs with, you know, leather patches on the inside, leather, I recommend a full leather seat, or chinks or shafts. To me, I do not get horseback with my level of skill and ability. I do not get horseback without leather on my legs. I just don't do it because you don't know what's going to happen. So leather gives you a little bit of tackiness. I don't recommend rubber. I've seen jodhpurs that have rubbery bumps on them, little horse patterns or hearts or whatever. I do not recommend rubber because it's too sticky. And there are times when you need to get away from a situation and it might slow you down. So I don't recommend rubber, but leather on leather gives you the ideal stickiness without getting you stuck. Okay, sticky, not stuck. That's the key. But get horseback and just sit there. You don't even have to go at a walk. Just sit there. If you say, okay, you know, honey, I'm going to go out and ride my horse. If your honey looks outside and you're in a small area with the horse saddled, I don't care if you're in the stall, you know, make sure there's nothing, you know, you're going to hit your head or anything. But, you know, even if you're in the stall and you want to just sit horseback, just sit there. You don't, just feeling that horse, you'll start noticing little things like how a horse will just shift its weight. And it's amazing in a saddle, even in a heavy Western stock saddle like I ride in, you can feel the shoulder blade shift. You can feel the hip shift. You can feel when just the weight shift, the horse may not even pick up their feet, but you'll feel what it feels like when they put their head down or pick their head up or feel their body. You can feel when they swish their tail, you know. And you could spend your whole ride just sitting there in one spot and be doing something, moving yourself towards that level of comfort that, you know, seems like a big jump right now. Now, I know other people would say, oh, yeah, just, you know, close your eyes, get on, and I'm going to flag that horse and have you cantering around this round pen, you know, without a bridle on. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that because it's not that the horse can't do it. The horse can do it. But how do you develop your ability in the process of what your body is developing, that recalibration and that familiarization to that sensation? It's a sensation. That's why it's kind of hard to put your finger on and hard to describe and explain. I've had people in clinics that they just sit there for a while, and pretty soon they realize I'm not holding on to the reins, and they get okay with that. And then they say, can I go walk around? And I say, sure, if you want to. And then they go walk around, and they come back, and I say, hey, I'll hold the reins now. Step off, and they step off, and everybody has a big cheer. And I mean, they might not have gone 5 feet, but the horse went into motion, and they come back. Everybody gives them a pat on the back. And I'll tell you what, that right there takes courage. That takes courage, you know, to do that, to realize you don't have that comfort with that sensation, but to do it anyway and come back. And I say, you've had your first successful trail ride. And people go, well, it's not a trail ride unless we're, you know, going up and down and around and, you know, we're going out. It, to me, that's a trail ride. Who's to say how long your trail or how far? Even if you just sit on the horse in the stall, to me, you went on a trail ride. And when we start kind of breaking down those paradigms in our mind, then we can start creating positive associations to say, you know what, yesterday I wouldn't have been able to do that, but today I can. And tomorrow you might walk around the stall or go a few feet around the round pen. If you feel uncomfortable, step off, step on, step off again, step on. Every time your body creates a positive association to an experience, you start whittling away or chipping away at that fear sensation. There's a wonderful book I recommended, you know, it's on my recommended reading on my website. It's called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. It's not about going out and cowboying up and, you know, being terrified, but just saddle up anyway. It's not any John Wayne kind of stuff. It's about going out and realizing the task at hand and saying, you know what, this is a process, but I'm going to do things at a level that I'm comfortable with and then feel the success of that little thing. Because people do, let me give you the bigger picture. People tend to do something. Say they sit on the horse and they finally quit shaking and they relax a little bit and they step down off the horse. A lot of times what we do, because we're goal-oriented type creatures, you know, you don't see the horse going out there going, come on, when are we going to go on a trail ride? What's the matter with you people? The horse is not a goal-oriented creature. The horse is just living in the moment. But what we tend to do is we say, well, I sat on the horse and I felt comfortable and I got off. And rather than looking at it as a success, we go, well, I still didn't go on a trail ride. And so what we're doing mentally is creating a negative association to what we didn't do and how impossible that task tends to seem. We miss the opportunity to creating those positive associations at the level of comfort that we're in. It's a very simplistic explanation, but sometimes just that explanation shifts the person's mind to say, oh, you're right, I'm not focusing on what I did, rather than, you know, letting it be overshadowed by this, you know, big gap of what we haven't done. I'll conclude this in saying, to me, in my observation, anything worthwhile that we do in our lives is something that requires us to chip away at it, period. Whether it's relationships or accomplishments or goals or, you know, any of those things. It's a process and we chip away at it. And it seems like, conversely, anything that makes us feel good right away usually isn't that good for us and doesn't really have a lasting sense of fulfillment for us. So if you can look at it that way and say, okay, it is what it is, and I'm just going to do the best that I can do, and some days it's going to feel good and some days not so good, but what you'll find if you have this awareness and carry this awareness with you, that it'll start tipping. It'll start tipping, and you won't even quite know when it happened. But your emotion, your association to it, your mental process, it's like reprogramming a computer. It's just chipping away at it, chipping away. And one day you'll go, oh, my gosh, I remember when this used to terrify me, and now it doesn't anymore. And now I'm going, you know, 50 feet by myself, you know. And who cares how long it takes? Don't let anybody around you, especially your loved ones, or people who are close to you, your friends, tell you that you should be doing more. You trust yourself. You know it's between you and your horse. It's a process that you're going through. And, you know, just do what you can and chip away at that. That's what I would have you do at a clinic. But the clinic doesn't end. When I finish clinics, people are all sad. Oh my gosh, we did so much in 3 days, and, oh, we're done, and this kind of thing. We're not done. When we get finished with a clinic, to me, that's just the beginning. Because what you're doing is taking your concepts and these ideas and these ways of thinking home with you. You've made that mental shift, and that's what these teleseminars are for, is to give you another observation or dose or way of thinking that you can take home. I can't fix, you know, problems like that in, you know, 30 minutes or 3 days or 3 weeks. But I can come in and give you a piece, give you another piece, an inspiration. And oftentimes it's the confidence to know to trust yourself. You're on the right track. Do what you know and just keep chipping away at it. And, you know, the horse is there for you. I really want to, emphasize that. But the right horse can give you the kinds of experiences that will advance your skills and confidence. And the horse that, is more challenging oftentimes is the horse, you know, like the younger horse with Judy is, you know, leave that horse on the back burner for a little while until the experience with a more confident horse gives you that sensation where you're comfortable on a loose rein. Then you'll have that ability to go back to the younger horse and offer it to that horse as well. So it's all kind of, you know, tied in together, but it's about allowing ourselves to have the experiences and be as forgiving and generous and compassionate to ourselves as we try to be for our horses. A lot of times people who are very compassionate to others, we somehow forget to learn to have that compassion, you know, for ourselves and our own process as well. So I hope that that helps you get some insight. Don't wait for a clinic. Don't wait for my clinic or anybody's clinic. Get out there and just start doing some things to get yourself onto the back of the horse. Make sure, you know, I would do it with a saddle. I would do it with sticky pants on. You know, I wouldn't go out there and say, okay, well, it's, you know, you need to do bareback exercises. From what you're describing, I don't feel that you're ready for that. A saddle does give you more security staying on the back of the horse. You know, to me, bareback is you know, down the road. So, you know, just do what you can and trust yourself in doing it.
Karen, you know, too, if she's afraid of falling off, your night latch is a good, you know, thing to have on the saddle is another, you know, thing there.
Thanks
if she's familiar with that.
Thanks for bringing that up. I apologize for not mentioning it. There's a tool on my website, and this is something, you know, a lot of times people are afraid of the tools and the things that are for sale on a website. I know I have an aversion when I think, see things for sale, but I can assure you everything on my website is on there because it's a tool that will help you develop your feel, develop your confidence, develop your communication, your skills and ability with your horse. And this one particular tool is called a security strap. And you can put a dog collar on. I've used my 6-foot string, you know, for this purpose. But just putting it around the cannel of the front of the saddle and having your hand under it, even if you're just sitting still in the stall, you know, a lot of times it's having your hand under that, pulling your seat down into the saddle, even with the horse not in motion. Just see what that feels like. It uses the strong part of your arm. It activates your bicep and the strong part of your arm, and it helps you keep your seat in the saddle. You know, that's the fear, is when the seat goes away from the saddle. that's when bad things happen. But if you learn to really sink down in the seat, to me, that is developing that ability to have a good seat with a horse. A lot of times, you know, in lessons, traditionally people will have you ride without your stirrups. What that's doing is to help a person recalibrate their balance and their motion to the sensation of the weight in their seat and their legs. You know, from the knees up, you can squeeze like crazy, okay? Squeeze like to hang on, squeeze like crazy. Below your knees is reserved for communication of direction with the horse, direction and transition with the horse. So, you know, riding without stirrups is a really good lesson. Here's what we tend to do. See, Melinda, you got me going again. I was going to wrap up that question, but we get going again. What we tend to do, our balance, people will walk up to me and they go, I have terrible balance. And I'll say, well, you know what? I haven't seen you fall down yet. You walked over to me. You never stumbled. You walked, you know, they're standing looking at me. They go, no, I have terrible balance. I say, well, it doesn't look like it to me. You're keeping your head, you know, your body upright. You're not falling over. What they're saying to me really is that when they get into a seated position on a moving animal, they think, I don't have balance. And some people don't, because think about it, other than sitting, you know, on a couch or a lazy boy recliner, you know, how much seated balance activity are we really required to do? So, you know, maybe a bicycle, you know, there's balance from side to side. What I started learning to do to improve my balance was to ride a unicycle, which is balanced in all directions independent from my lower legs pedaling the unicycle. Now, I'm not good at it, but I can go along pretty good, you know, with a fence nearby if I need to grab on with my hands. But that's the reason I started doing those things, to develop my seated balance. So that's another area. Just by going and sitting on the horse, you start developing your seated balance. There's another tool that I'm researching right now that helps develop seated balance without a horse around. There's several things, you know, out on the market, but I really haven't found anything quite like this one. That I'll be doing an announcement soon on that. But, you know, just getting something to hang on to. A lot of times people say they're, you know, there's several things out there in the horse world that I think are just untrue. And one of them is don't hang on. Don't grab your saddle horn. Don't hang on the leather. Well, I'll tell you what, if you're about ready to go a different direction than the saddle and the horse are going, you hang on. You grab whatever you can to get your, you know, seat back in the middle of that saddle. And so sometimes what you can do to develop your confidence is to get the security strap, which is a little bit different. It has two pieces of leather, and one leather is raised up, so there's always a little pocket for your hand to get under quickly. If you ride with a dog collar or a string and things like I was describing, sometimes things can happen so fast you can't get your hand under it fast enough. So when I came across this at one of the horse expos, it's a saddle maker, a very good saddle maker that just made some and had them there, and I said, gosh, can I, you know, order these from you? We just had another shipment come in, you know, the other day, because they're so valuable just to have on your saddle that if you get into a little bit of trouble, I recommend that people put one on each side, because you don't know which hand's going to be closest to get under that, you know, when you need to. So I always feel really good for people when I see people ride by and have one on each side. I have a hanger-oner. If you, you know, watch my DVDs, I describe it to you. I have, you know, what I call hanger-oners, both sides on the front and also on the back. I ride with a Cheyenne roll on a Western saddle because I want that lip under the back of the cantle to hang on to if I need it. So, you know, why not? Why not hang on? What good is that doing for somebody to say, don't hang on, don't grab leather, you know, cowboy up? To me, that's just a bunch of garbage. It's about building your confidence. I'll have people ride along holding on to the security strap, you know, from the get-go before they even, you know, start walking. And then pretty soon you find, gosh, I don't need to let go, but your muscle memory is there to get under it if you need to. I ride with one on my saddle all the time. So people say, oh, well, that's just for colts, or that's just for this, or, you know, whatever. I don't agree. I think every saddle should be equipped with one. They shouldn't go out the door without one. So that's just my opinion. But, you know, I'm kind of weird.
Yeah, Karen, I probably need to get Elisa one. Grandma has one, but I don't have one for her, so I probably need to work on that. She needs to learn how
well,
to use that.
Well, you bet. You
yeah.
bet. And if you need to, I know her saddle's quite a bit smaller. How old is she now?
She's 5.
Yeah. Her saddle's quite a bit smaller. You know, we can have that made and have it sized down to fit her saddle.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Because those are very handy, and it is definitely better to stay in that saddle if you can than to come off, because it hurts a lot worse if you come off than if you stay on.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, if, you know, even no matter what happens, you know, to me, safety is number one with horses. If you're not set up to be safe, you know, I have so many people that have come off of horses, and then they get one of those. And, you know, to me, prevention is the key. I just, you know, I don't know why you wouldn't, you know. I don't know why you wouldn't ride with them. Or I don't know why you wouldn't ride with leather on your legs. You know, there's no reason not to, you know. So, I don't know. You got to gear up. This is not a regular sport, you know. If you go out and start playing tennis and get a junky tennis racket and wear blue jeans, you know, who cares? Who cares? But as you start getting more proficient in it, you start realizing, oh, gosh, you know, a better tennis racket, you know, something that allows me to move more freely, gosh, you know, different shoes, you know, you start expecting it. But the difference is if you don't gear up for this sport, bad things happen. If you don't gear up for about any other sport, you know, what's going to happen? Somebody, you know, who cares? But in this sport, if you don't learn these things and gear up for it and prepare for it, you know, it's too bad. You know, nobody comes in the office on Monday and goes, oh, I had the worst tennis accident. Oh, my gosh, you know. You don't hear those things. But, you know, unfortunately with horses you do. But in so many times these kind of situations could have been prevented with a different knowledge, different tools, you know, or technique. You can't eliminate risk with horses. You can't, but you can certainly minimize the risk with horses.
Well, Pat, we commend you because, you know, fear is a big thing, but if she's doing the right things by getting the education, because, like you say many times, Karen, replacing that fear with the education and the knowledge is just huge. So good luck, Pat, there, and hopefully you'll go ahead and make that effort to come to another clinic, because you are riding, whether you're on the ground or in the saddle, you're gaining more and more confidence with that horse. Yeah, it's amazing. So, okay, well, we'll go ahead. I think we've got time for one more real quick here. And this one is becoming a confident leader. And it says, Dear Karen, I'm a 60-year-old lady who has been riding since age 10. For 31 and a half years, I've been unsuccessfully not being able to be a confident leader with my gorgeous 15.3 hands appendix gelding. I'm a second owner of this horse, well-trained as far as arena trained, push button, parks out on command. I attended your lecture in Tucson on women and fear. I worked with my horse doing lots of groundwork as per your videos and have an immediate positive result. Our relationship and communication has improved. He has a very strong prey and fear button that sadly gets reinforced with multiple incidents as recent as last week. During these fear incidences, both the horse and I are reinforced with trauma and pain that leaves us both confused. Because of these reoccurring episodes, I feel that we are not there for each other and perhaps not a good match. I question his fear episodes that are very real to him and may possibly be tantrums on his part that he gets away with. And I also question his training and how he thinks and the degree in his mind as far as how much that he surrendered to his masters, putting his fear and trauma over the years his number one priority. That's where he comes riding. Riding outside the arena is all well. Then all of a sudden he sees a deer or hears yet seeking the squeaking brakes of a nearby mountain bike, and he lights up. And I guess she's wanting to know how to become a more confident leader. Or is this not a good match for her?
Well, you know, there's as in everything, there's lots of considerations. Some horses have a stronger survival reaction than others. And I always answer this question, you know, almost every teleseminar kind of a couple different ways. Sometimes it's not the right match, you know, of a horse. And that's a really hard thing to say. And, you know, I used to tell people, you know, just if you keep going and keep chipping away at it and keep advancing your skills, you know, it could turn around for you depending on, you know, what you want. But a lot of times, you know, what I'm picturing is that, you know, a lot of people want to go out and recreate. You know, we want to relax. We want a confident horse that hears, you know, squeaky mountain bike brakes or, you know, a deer or something and goes, hey, yeah, dude, look at that, mahalo. You know, they want this laid back, you know, kind of unflappable, you know, type of horse. And a lot of times that's an innate characteristic. You know, then there's learned behavior and there's experiences and things like that. Every so often you come across a horse, you know, even a young horse, you know, and I go back to my friend Dan Moyer last year. He had a colt that he'd had for, you know, quite a few months, and he'd had him out on cattle. And he said from a young age, he could put that horse into situations, into pressure situations, and that horse would just relax. He would just take it all in, wouldn't get bothered. Cattle might be having trouble or whatever, and he would just keep his cool. And some people, you know, from Colorado that I was giving a clinic with, they were asking if I knew of a horse that was just relaxed, could put anybody on, that kind of thing. And I, you know, put those people together. So even though it was a young horse, that particular individual was just really laid back and relaxed. So, you know, you can do what you're doing, and it's really great, you know, because you're developing your ability and, you know, chipping away at that leadership thing, you know, kind of a deal. But, you know, if that's what you want to do, if you want to go through that process and develop your skills and abilities of a horseman, I can't recommend it more highly. I mean, it's, you know, what I do personally, what I personally enjoy. But if your goal is, if I say, you know, what is your goal? What would you like? You say, you know what, I'd like to just go on a nice, relaxed trail ride and, you know, be comfortable and that kind of thing. You know, a good friend of mine, Diana Lamb, you know, was always dealing with these kinds of things, and she was developing her skill and ability, and she was doing really well. But, you know, it was going to be this long, you know, journey and process with her. And what I suggest to people is consider a gated horse. A lot of times people say, they get something in their mind, they say, well, I only like Arabs, or I only like quarter horse, or I only like this, and they don't even look at gated horses. She went out and got a little Icelandic horse, and that horse is pretty confident. He's not so high, you know, she's not so high up from the ground. And I saw her take her skills and ability with this new horse. And, I mean, she goes off. She told me years and years ago, she said, Karen, my goal is the same as mine, to be able to go anywhere, anytime, do anything, and have fun doing it. And if that's what your goal is, the horse can be a big consideration in reaching that goal. So if you find that the horse is, you know, spooking a lot or has a high reaction when he spooks that kind of mismatches your current skill and ability, you know, consider, you know, a different horse. It could make all the difference in the world to you. Now, if you don't want to consider that and you want to, you know, continue on with this horse, what I would recommend is do even more on the ground. Ask for not just gentle and slow and kumbaya. Speed it up. Pressure the horse. Ask them for more. Ask them for more immediate, snappy departures, faster woes. You know, put your horse into pressure situations when you're not in an unexpected pressure situation so that the two of you can develop the communication and the reflex to respond appropriately when the unexpected happens, you see. So, you know, aside from all the other answers in the teleseminar of having sticky pants and hanger-oners, you know, and all these kinds of things, you know, when something's coming along or something unexpected happens, that's when your body's going to go back and access your reflexes. So, and there are things that can happen with any horse. You know, I was going along, I was finished with a clinic up in Nebraska the university up there. I'd finished a clinic and I was just out on a relaxing ride, just went up and I went through a cut through of this hill where the dirt road, you know, kind of had cliffs on both sides, you know, kind of cut through this hill. And I was going along just, you know, singing a song, nothing going on, but I had my sticky pants on, I had everything, I had my horse, you know, and an owl flew out of its nest over our head, dropping clumps of, you know, dirt clods on it. And I'll tell you what, both of those horses whirled around. I mean, I didn't even know what had happened. It just happened so fast. Those horses whirled around and just both took off at a flat run. Okay. So, I mean, those are my horses. So would I say, oh, I've got to get, you know, different horses or, you know, what do I need to do? But all those things that prevented me from having a serious accident there, I had sticky pants on, I had a hanger-oner, I had done so many things on the ground to develop my rope handling skills that my body went into automatic, you know, the lead rope of the horse I was ponying went into the right place, didn't get wrapped around me, my other horse whirled around, and they went, you know, a few jumps, you know, out of there, and automatically my hand reached down, bent my horse, you know, took him down, slowed him down without getting tangled up in the other line. You know, and I look back, and here's this owl floating in the sky, and it was all beautiful at sunset. You know, what was that? So the answer really is, whatever horse you have, do everything that you can in advance of the situation so that your body will go into an automatic, when your body goes into automatic pilot, it's going to go into motion. It's not going to freeze. It's going to go into motion and do the right thing. The sensations in your body are going to take over. Sorry, I'm going to stop just a second. There's somebody talking. There's somebody talking in the background. If you can hold off just a few minutes, please.
No,
we won't.
Okay.
Is that somebody you know? That's not it.
No,
on your end, is it?
No, it's not. I'm not sure.
Sorry about that. People are listening to the teleseminar and sometimes get busy doing something in the background. So anyway, that's the real answer, is to develop your skills and abilities so that your body will do the right things, not if, but when those things happen with any horse. But another horse might be the type of individual that will give you your goal, which is to be able to relax and recreate while still being prepared. You know, the horse should not make up for you developing your skill and ability. You know, I don't believe in Band-Aids as well.
Right.
You know, so there's a balance of both. But try that. You know, I may not have answered anything there for you, but I might have given you more things, you know, to consider. But a different horse can absolutely make a difference for you as well. But it doesn't make up for developing your skills and ability.
That's very true. I think you put things in perspective for me as far as asking me what are my goals.
I
do feel the horse and I don't trust each other because of our differences. So for us to build trust together is very difficult. And I think he needs a more confident rider.
Not just Prince.
And I think I need
And that could be. And if you look at my website and what I write, I talk about leadership, confidence, and trust. Trust is our ultimate goal. And you already said it. Confidence gives you that trust. And, you know, I wish there was a confidence fairy that could come along and go, ding, you know, you have confidence. But where we get the confidence from is going back to the number one thing, which is leadership. Now, let me give you another aspect of leadership. Leadership is having lots of qualities. You know, lots of qualities, compassion, direction, understanding, lots of things. But it's the number one skill. There's one skill that makes all those other qualities work or not, and that's our skill at communication. So when somebody, say, let's transfer it to a military example. Say there's a military group that's going to go in for a particular task. If the leader in that group starts going, oh, wait, this is scaring me, what happens to all the other individuals in that group? But the person who's the leader in that group is groomed for that over many years. There's a lot of people that are passed over for promotion because they don't have that skill or ability to be able to, you know, have that unique, you know, ability. Now, here's the good news. Leadership is a learnable skill. And this is where sometimes we, you know, come back to this. We haven't talked about in this tell summer, but I talk about quite a bit. When the horse becomes afraid, that is not the time to back off and soothe the horse and calm the horse down. When I go along and my horse sees the owl and takes off, I'll tell you what, I'm doing something. I'm saying, hey, dude, what owl? All I know is that you're running and I got to shut this thing down. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm confident in that because I've spent so much time in the simulation of those situations. So when I'm in the non-threatening environment, I am expecting a response and a behavior as if I am in that situation. So if you draw from the military again, when guys go in, they go into boot camp. Okay? Does anybody come up to them and soothe them and go, okay, now listen, it's all okay, you're okay, I know this might be your first time away from home, but, you know, they treat them like crap, don't they? They come in and they break them down and say, I'm going to program you to only respond to the person who is the commanding officer at the time, because our survival is going to depend on that in the future, in future situations. To me, we can draw from that example and go, oh, well, you know, nobody's worrying about if they're hurting their feelings. They're barking orders at them, you know, in their face. You know, everything is you know, militarized. But there's a purpose of survival in that. So when I'm with my horse, to me, leadership is, you know, when I'm just leading from point A to point B, say I'm done riding, I've unsaddled, we're walking back to the pasture, if that horse, and I'm not saying if, but when my horse, because horses are horses, when my horse starts going, you know, Karen, you're not walking fast enough, lady, you know, I'm going to get back to that pasture with my buddies, you know, you can see it, you can sense it. And I'll tell you what, I'm like a mean old mare and I squeal, and, you know, get back. And pretty soon they go, oh, well, you know, I guess I could wait till we get back to the pasture. See, so it's how you turn them loose. It's how you walk along with them. It's how, you know, your interaction is at feeding time. I may throw hay down there, but that doesn't mean you come in and push past me and stick your big old nose in there. The lead mare says when they're gonna do what.
Right. He's been the leader. I can see that now.
Yeah.
He's been leading
so,
me.
Well, and so here's an opportunity for you. With that awareness, you know, awareness is the first step towards change. With that awareness, and you have this ultimate vision of being confident on the trail ride, okay? That's a common one for a lot of people. If that's
right.
your ultimate vision, in order to do that, he needs to perceive you unquestioning in the leadership role. Now, it's not to say the horse isn't going to spook or bolt or whatever, but they've been so conditioned to listen to you in every situation. See, the lead mare, and this is one of the things I talk about in my clinic, the lead mare doesn't come out and go, oh, you guys, just do whatever you want today. I'm tired, you know. She's on the job all the time. And I say a lead mare because in a natural environment, the lead horse in a natural herd is a mare. It's a matriarchal society. So she doesn't just go out. She doesn't worry about if the other horses like her. She doesn't go, oh, I don't want to hurt your feelings. You know, those kinds of dynamics, those are very human dynamics and very gender-specific dynamics. So, you know, sometimes when people get out there and they say horsemanship for women, they get this impression that, you know, we're going to go out and braid their manes and sing kumbaya and look lovingly into their eyes. And you can do that. But that's not all you do. It's like raising well-mannered children. It's wonderful to be affectionate and close to them. But that's not all you do. And so if you can kind of hold that idea that I'm not doing this to you, you don't take it personally. My horse is walking back to the pasture because it wants to go where he wants to go. I'm not going to take that personally and be angry and go, quit that. You know, there's none of that. I just squeal like a mare and throw him, and he jumps back and he goes, oh, sorry, my bad, and we let it go. See, there's a different attitude, a different atmosphere and of expectation of behavior around that. But the minute, you know, you let a horse do something, I might allow a horse to do something, but that's mindful, isn't it, versus letting a horse do something. So it goes back to the thing, how many times does it take to give a kid a candy bar in a grocery store before you have a problem? See?
Right.
So when we're interacting with a horse, it's very similar to that. To say, okay, what is my expectation? What would a lead mare do? What would she put up with? And I'll tell you what, it's not much, is it? But here's the cool thing. And,
hey,
you know,
Karen,
I give
I'm going to interrupt you just a second. We're about almost 9:15, just to let you know. We could talk horses all night,
thank
but
you.
I just wanted to let you
well,
aware
I'm,
of the time there.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm going to finish with this.
Yes.
When horse A bites horse B, everybody, if you think about it, it's horse B's fault for being there when the teeth got there. The most amazing thing happens, and this might be the piece for you with what leadership really means. What really happens in a horse's mind when horse B gets bit, they fall in love with horse A. Okay? We see this all the time among horses. You take the horse out that bites and kicks all the other horses, and all the other horses are crying after that horse. See? But in human standards, you know, especially women, we go, oh, we do what I call the chick thing. Oh, I don't want to hurt his feelings. What if I do it wrong? What does the horse think of me? So what I want you to consider is you're going to emulate a horse's behavior and not just any horse, the lead horse. And you're going to think about, you know, what that means. And what's amazing is I'll step in with a horse and interact with a horse, that horse instantly recognizes my leadership and turns loose and says, peace, love, you know, I love you, man. And
uh-huh.
I go, great, okay?
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't mean that you train the horse and the horse never goes, okay, you're the leader and I'll be the submissive little follower. I wouldn't want that. It's an interactive, you know, kind of a thing. So
right.
change your expectation with a horse and see if that doesn't make a difference for you.
Okay. Thank you, Sharon.
Okay. Okay, well, Karen, we really thank you, and I know both of us could talk horses all night long, so we really appreciate everybody joining us tonight, and thank you for all the questions. And Karen, do you have anything you want to close with real quickly?
Well, you know it's never quick with me.
I know.
but I'm doing just a handful of clinics this year. I'm working on some other projects, and putting some more formats of information out there for people. So just know that I'm, working hard at getting these other things done, and look forward to seeing you at an expo. I'll be in Canada next month doing the Canadian Outdoor Expo. And, just have fun with your horses. Have fun with your horses and, just keep getting that knowledge with them.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us. Thanks, Karen, for your time. And everybody have a safe summer, and we'll see you next month. Good night, everybody.
Okay.
Good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.